couple of all times, Sarah and Cord McCoy. And
howdy, Tulsa. Howdy.
We got Tulsa too. Hi, Tulsa. Oh, so how's it going, guys?
Good.
Going good. Yeah. Just trying to keep up with her.
I know, and Tulsa just turned two, right?
Just turned two, yep.
Oh my gosh. So we were talking a little bit before. Cord and I met on The Amazing Race, which was such a wild experience. Cord, you're a 3-time Amazing Racer. And when we did All-Stars with you guys, everybody was like, Cord and Jet, they're the ones to watch out for. They are unstoppable. Do not, like, the Cowboys are going to win. Y'all have this ability to do everything in such a record time. Like, if you had to assemble a car, you could put it together half the time of everyone else.
We felt the other way. We felt we were so far behind, like, we had to be fast on the challenges because we've been lost all day, and we're fixing loose. The funny thing about that is it's so much like life. You think, well, I've already done the race once, so like the second time I'm going to be really good at it and I'm going to win for sure. And then you run into the same challenges. You have the same problems you did the last time. So it's as much as you like to think that you're prepared for it and you're better the second time, it's still tough. It's still its own challenge.
Was it frustrating knowing that everybody was trying to get y'all out because y'all were – such a tough team? Like, was that frustrating knowing that was against you the whole time?
Well, I guess we never did really feel like we had that chip on our shoulder, like we were a tough team. I mean, we had our own challenges through everything. And we didn't really intentionally not buddy up with people. It's just most of the time we were so lost by ourselves, we just felt alone. But it was good. You'd be amazed like how many friends that we made through the race. We didn't run together, but, we still stay in contact with a bunch of the racers just because we have the same common story. I mean, we had an experience together that there's only a small group of people in the world have done to be able to experience those challenges and see the world. And I tell so many people that the biggest blessing that you get from the Amazing Race is seeing and realizing what you already have. I mean, we're pretty blessed where we live and what we do today.
Who do you keep up with from the race?
Well, Steve and Allie a bunch. You know, we went up to Allie's wedding out there. And I guess for a lot of us, with social media these days, from Nashville to California to Oklahoma, seems pretty close together that we can jump on and, FaceTime a conversation or watching their kids grow up. It's pretty neat. And anytime you scroll by one of the racers, you see what they're doing today and it kind of like, takes you back to memories like, oh, I remember episode 6 when they were about to drown or something. So it was, it is something that kind of brings you back every time.
Well, Jen and I, we owe you our whole race experience because, and Sarah, I don't know when you watch this back, Jen was working Cord so hard because we were at one of the stops where we had to assemble a car and I was having a full-blown meltdown. Because I cannot assemble anything. And it was all in a different language. I think we were in China. And we had we had to assemble this like 57 million piece electronic car. And I was like, I can't do it. I'm like falling apart. And Jen was like, Cord, you gotta give us that express pass. We're the weakest team. Like, we're no threat. Go ahead and burn it up right now. You said
get rid of it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the feeling was mutual too, because Jet and I felt like we had this card would have people following us and begging for it all the time, and the last thing we want to do is hang on to it. So, we wanted to get rid of it too. Of course, y'all were the lucky ones.
Oh yeah. Well, I have to say, y'all were a class act the whole time. Such gentlemen, such incredible guys. And Sarah, I know the first time that Cord raced, y'all had just gotten married. Is that right? Like the first time,
actually, I knew I was going to go on this trip around the world, and I guess I wanted her hand before I left. So I asked Sarah to marry me a week before we left to go race the first time. The funny thing is that not many people know is the second time they called us and said, would you guys be interested in racing again? And we're like, yeah, of course. and they said that we would leave, the second week in November. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. Sarah, we've been getting ready for this wedding for a year and a half. So I said, I appreciate it, but we can't. They called back and they said, well, if we left November 14th, would you go? So I actually got married on the 13th and then took off on a trip around the world with my brother. So I kind of honeymooned with my brother, Jet. So I got married and just left the second time.
And Sarah, I was hoping he'd come home with $1 million.
I know. So what was it like for you, Sarah, when Cord left to go race around the world? Not one, not two, but three times in the middle of... So first time you're engaged, second time you just got married. I mean, what is it like when he's just gone? Because there's no contact. You're gone for a month. You can't communicate at all. You have no idea where he is. What's going on with you and your world during all that?
You try to stay so busy because you can't help but be a little nervous because it's a crazy, scary world out there. But then at the end, too, I mean, of course, in the back of your mind, you're like, oh, I hope they're winning. I hope they're having fun. And hopefully they come in first. But no, it is. It's crazy. So many people ask me, and it's just funny because they literally call you, and you get so excited to get the phone call from the amazing race, and they're like, they're still alive. Bye.
So they call and check in with you, like the production team.
They would call like once a week, just to say, hey, they're alive. That's basically it, like literally it, which was just,
You're like, can I have more? Are there any more details that you can give me?
I know.
Like, what's going on?
Yeah. She was tough. She never would give in. So.
I feel like the production team, like they are sealed. The lips are sealed. Like they don't give you any extra information. It is the bare minimum.
For sure.
Okay, so I want to talk about y'all's life on the farm because you guys are true cowgirls and and you got a little cowgirl, Tulsa.
Yeah, she wants to talk. She's a cowgirl.
Tell us about it. Tulsa, what do you got to say, Tulsa? Tell us everything.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She picks up a new word about everything.
Yeah. She's starting to talk so much, so it's so fun. But no, every day we really get to feel like we get to live out our dream here at the ranch and just around livestock. And we were both raised that way. So and then to get to raise Tulsa in the same environment, the same culture, it's so fun. But at the same time, I don't know, would you call it difficult? Every day you don't know what the day is gonna bring. You don't know when the cattle are gonna get out or when you're gonna need more feed. It's just like you feel like you're just kind of bouncing off the walls and just trying to survive every day. But it's so fun.
So what do you do every day?
Oh yeah.
What is a day in the life like for y'all?
Today we're actually getting ready. We have two production sales a year. So we raise and train and sell bucking bulls. So a lot of the bulls that you see on TV, we raise at the ranch. So I kind of switched teams a little bit. I used to ride bulls professionally, and now we're kind of like the coach, I guess, of the bucking bulls. So we're always working on that a lot. We've got a production sale coming up here at the ranch into November. So getting our catalog set together, we actually bring the auction right here to the ranch. And have a couple circus tents set up there, and we even have a little concert and get together before it. So I don't know, that seems to keep us busy. But this weekend there's a big bull riding that's on TV in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're taking bulls to that and buck those and showcase those. It's kind of what I do full time.
Okay, so you bring up a very good point. You are a bull rider, or I don't know if you're still riding bulls, but you are a professional bull rider. What kind of crazy person is a professional bull rider? That's insane.
Yeah, I think it started more for fun when I was just a little bit older than Tulsa. I'd go to junior rodeos and get on calves and steers for fun. But by the time I was in high school, I was making a living riding bulls in rodeo. So and then I got a full ride scholarship to go to Southwestern Oklahoma State on a rodeo team. But after college, I never did fill out a resume. I just went straight into professional bull riding. It seems so dangerous and crazy, but, when you're just kind of – not that you're just naturally good at it, but you've put so much time and effort into it, and someone writes you a check for working for 8 seconds, it's hard not to do it. I guess there's a lot of drawbacks of it. You know, I've woke up in a lot of different hospitals around the country, a lot of stitches and broken bones. But you definitely got to love to do it. You know, to nod your head for somebody to open the gate on an 1,800-pound animal to, you know, kind of let him have his way with you. But I guess you just grow a love into it. And then as I was riding bulls, we kind of was raising our own bulls to practice on. And then it's kind of like, you know, if you play baseball your whole career and then switching to coaching. So I get to still be around the sport almost every weekend and be involved. It's pretty exciting to be on the other end as well.
And your body probably thanks you. What do you think when you're in the pen and the gates are about to open and you're about to ride this animal that is doing everything he can to get you off of his back and kill you, maybe? I'm sure that's not his goal, but he doesn't care if he does. What are you thinking in those seconds before the gates open?
Well, I tell a lot of people it's kind of like riding a roller coaster with no seatbelt. I mean, when it kind of goes upside down and throws you around. You'd be amazed, like, how many reporters that we've done interviews with that, oh, I want to get on a bull, I want to sit on a bull. Well, then they sit down in the chute, and they can feel an 1,800-pound animal breathing and how muscled up and how real it gets. So they kind of second-guess it. So it's definitely when you see that gate open up, it's not that your life flashing before your eyes, but you go to thinking and reacting real fast because you know what a small mistake can cause.
Do you have a pre-writing ritual, like how to get your mind right?
Pray.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know. You just pray and stretch. I think you got to build a routine just like any other sport. This is what I do. I do step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, and I think it's such a reaction sport. He's talking about, you know, being able to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Well, the best way to learn how to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball is to see it throw at you a million times. So bull riding is the same thing. It's a reaction sport. When they open the gate, you don't really have time to think. It's just – it's all reaction. So, you know, it's all preparation until you crawl over the chute, and then it's just – it's game time. You just got to go.
And, Sarah, what are you like? I mean, like, you have to be a certain type of badass woman, too, to be married to someone doing this. Because, like, when he's gone on the Amazing Race, you're like, every single time he's throwing himself into this super dangerous situation. What's your routine to prepare for that?
Let cord, lots of praying. And you just kind of wait. You'd be waiting by the phone every time if I didn't go with him just to get that phone call from him. And if you didn't get one right away, you kind of did start to panic a little bit. But, no, extreme faith and lots of prayers.
I went and sat by Sarah one time in the stands as she watched the other bull riders, and I couldn't already sit beside her. So that's what I told her. I was like, there's no use two of us being scared. Just let me be scared. You enjoy the show.
Yeah, you don't ever I guess I never got to the point where you're just, like, watching it and sitting there calmly, like I'm like moving with him as he's riding the bull and just as upset as he is when he falls off, you know, but
Yeah. Are you guys both kind of adrenaline junkies?
I don't really think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't really consider myself that much. You know, I guess you get to where you crave it some, but you know, I don't just like get up in the morning like, man, I really want to jump out of a plane today. I mean, like it doesn't get that much, but I do like riding roller coasters, so I think there's certain things that it does that you like kind of get your kicks off of. But
I think kind of like what Cord said too, you know, he started by, you know, maybe riding sheep and baby calves, you know, and it just kind of evolved to that. So it's not like I don't think he just woke up, you know, like people don't just wake up and be like, I want to become a professional bull rider now that I'm 24 and I'm not sure what I want to do with my life. So it is kind of, I guess, just kind of evolves over time. Yeah. And then the next thing you know, you're riding professionally and you're like, really? It's funny too, because Cord and I talk now that he's retired. We watch the bull riders and we're kind of like, oh man, maybe he should give it up. Or what are they thinking? Surely there's a better profession out there. And we're like, well, that was us. So we can't say much.
And Sarah, did you ride stuff? Were you in the rodeos too?
Yes. So we grew up, me and my five sisters, we grew up on a
five?
Ranch in Iowa. Yeah. Five sisters. Yeah.
What order are you?
I'm second to youngest.
Okay.
Second to youngest. Yeah. So, and our dad rode professionally as well, but we grew up around it. So again, I think that kind of made it a little bit easier when you know, your husband's a bull rider. But yeah, we grew up around it, and we rodeoed a little bit.
So what are some, I feel like everyone needs to know some of the basic, like, I don't even remember the word I'm looking for, like the cowboy code, like the cowboy and cowgirl code. Like, nobody is better than cowboys and cowgirls. Like, okay. So, like, keeping their word, following through. Like, what are some of the codes that you live by? Because I feel like that's lost on a lot of people in the world. But, like, when you're a cowboy and a cowgirl, like, you have this, like, certain set of standards and codes that's just, like, just how it is. So what are some of those?
Yeah. I think they might even call it, like, the code of the West. But I think just honesty would be one of the biggest things. I mean, that you know, it takes so long to earn, and then in one day to lose it forever. And I think that's
true.
You kind of grow up with standing behind your word, you know, watching what you say, but when you say it, mean it, kind of idea. I don't know. I think we, maybe just our families kind of grow up with, you know, working hard of earning your keep as well. And I think that'd be three of the main things that I think about. And I think that kind of the new popular thing about it is it's not, being a cowboy is not even in, you know, the cowboy hat or the boots. It's kind of the way of life. And it's kind of a new popular thing I really like. You know, you can live downtown New York City and live that code of the West, that cowboy way. You know, because if I walk out in there without a hat on, even more sneakers, the bulls or the cows wouldn't care. It's not a dress code for the cows. You know, it's the way you treat them and feeding them. You know, I can wear Bermuda shorts and still feed them, and they'd still be happy. So the dress code is not it. I think it is a way of life that makes you the code of the West or the, you know, cowboy way.
I agree. Sarah, what do you think? Do you have anything to add to the codes?
I agree, but I also want to add in there, being a steward of the land and really being just grateful, grateful for every day and being kind. I think cowboys are some of the kindest, cowboys and cowgirls as a whole are some of the kindest people in the world. So always having that willingness to help others.
And I agree.
It's realized it's a small world. Just like Sarah says, though, you know, treating someone bad, the news travels fast. And it's all like close knit. And I think the world has got so fast in some places that, you know, offending somebody is not that big a deal because they can go to the next person and make a friendship. When the person you offend knows the next person you're going to meet as well, it seems to hold more weight behind it that, you know, if I treat him bad, the next guy is not going to do business with me. And I think that's a way of life that's still alive in the cowboy way or the Western way of life.
I feel like the cowboy work ethic is unlike anyone's work ethic also. And the lack of complaining. Like, I feel like cowboys and cowgirls don't complain. Like, say your cows get out or something's happening with your crops or whatever's going on. Like, you really can't sit around and complain about it because you just got to take action, right?
Yeah, there's usually nobody to listen, so I can complain to myself, maybe. You know, there were some things that I feel like I learned on the Amazing Race that made me better.
What?
And that there was things that I didn't really know how to do when I started. But, you know, the persistence of the faster I can learn how to do this job, the faster I can be done to go to the next leg of the race. And it's one thing that I still take with me today is like I'll step into a new job or a new challenge, and I will think back to the Amazing Race thinking, you know what, just grind it out. Even if it's like carrying 1,000 bags 50 feet, you know, the faster I carry the first 50, the faster the rest of them go. So there's some things that I feel like I learned on the race that it still affects the challenges that we have today.
Well, and Sarah, I want you to know this. Cord, I don't know if you know this too. The Cowboys, they got stuff done faster than anyone. Even if they didn't know how to do it, like Cord is saying, The Cowboys would figure it out. It's like the way your brain worked. Y'all could just assess the situation and then knock it out of the park as like faster than anyone. It was almost like magic sometimes. It was crazy.
It didn't feel like that at the time. I'll get that straight.
So what are some of the things that you took away from the Amazing Race? You said you learned some stuff. I learned a lot of stuff too.
Yeah, I think what we started with, though, just the appreciation. I know a lot of them was Sri Lanka, India, and there were some challenging locations that we went to. And, you know, I don't know, just me raising Tulsa today and all the little kids out there that were pretty challenging locations that we went through. And, man, you know, because you take off on the race, and the only thing you can think about is that $1 million and how I'm going to spend it when I get home. And by the time you get halfway around the world, headed back to the other side, it's not – you don't feel like you're racing for the $1 million anymore. I mean, you want to win first. You want to do a good job. But, like, who am I to whine about anything of some of the places that we got to see? So.
I totally agree. Just the appreciation of realizing how blessed we are and how much we have over here. Like, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And how little it takes to actually be happy. Like, if you have a happy marriage and a life that you love, you're better than most.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was one of the things. And not to talk bad about some of the countries that we went in, but the wealth of the countries didn't always relate exactly to the happiness that they had. I mean, some of the richest, you know, most prevalent locations, you know, historic location in the world was kind of like rude. People wouldn't give us direction. And then you'd go to the poorest people in the world, didn't even have shoes or a shirt, you know, would work and help and, you know, be happy as can be all day long. You know, and I think it was just kind of hit you with a realization of, you know, what makes you happy.
I totally agree. So, Sarah,
I want to add too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Brought back memories because I can remember Ford coming back. I can't remember what country it is. This guy is like the least picky eater ever. But I remember him telling me one country he went to, he couldn't even eat the noodles because of the water that they were cooked in. Like, it was that bad.
I think it was India.
Yeah.
And I remind myself of that.
Sarah, I want to talk to you guys about y'all's journey to Tulsa. Your sweet little girl who everyone hearing this, like, a beautiful little buzzing, chirping angel in the background, that's Tulsa. Because you guys had a 7-year journey to her. And I'm probably going to get emotional because now that I'm a mom, we struggled for, like, a year to have Sunny. But, like, y'all waited 7 years for Tulsa. Talk to me about that journey and, just, yeah.
Well, I guess I'll start by... I actually met my wife, Sarah, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it was it was kind of a joke at first. We were going to have a girl first and, you know, and that we would name her Tulsa. It was like a joke, but it kind of stuck over a 7-year period. But Sarah, I guess she went to the bull riding on Friday night and she told her dad that, you know, she was at the bull ride and said, hey, her dad said, if you see this little redheaded cowboy, to tell him to tell his dad I said hello. Evidently, our dads knew each other and we had never met. So Saturday night, this little blonde-headed girl walks up and said, hey, my dad told me to tell your dad hello. And I said,
so y'all's dads basically set y'all up.
Well, I don't know if they set us up, but that was kind of a joke at the wedding. 2 years later, I was like, oh, I forgot to tell you, Dad. Steve told me to tell you hello. You know, so I forgot about that real fast. but that's how we met in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then... Sarah, can tell the story.
Well, I have to add, this might make me sound a little bit crazy, but I'm not really that crazy. I told you I have 5 sisters.
She married a bull rider.
Daddy's girl. But he did. He kind of treated us like boys. So we never had that, like, really, I don't know, we didn't talk about boyfriends and getting married and things like that with our dad. We just didn't have conversations like that. But like Cord said, my dad told him to tell this Cord high. He knew him, knew his dad and all that. And the next day after I met Ford, I called my dad and I said, okay, I just got to tell you something. Don't tell anybody this, but I'm going to marry that man.
How did you know? What was it?
You know, and that's the thing. It sounds so crazy. But it's like literally love at first sight, and just
Mitchie played hard to get for 2 years, so don't let her
sweep me off. I know, I was just like in shock. I'm like, oh my goodness! But sweep you off your feet. I mean, that's it. It literally, it was like that. It was just love at first sight. So
what do you think? What was it that made you say Cord is the one?
I can't tell you. It's just a mixture of, it was just, the emotions were just overwhelming, and it was the weirdest feeling ever. Mm. I didn't tell him that, of course, because he probably would have ran really, really, really fast. Like, I'm going to marry you. Mm. You just don't know it, but.
Why? And then you played hard to get for 2 years. Was that intentional?
No, not 2 years. I mean, oh, I do think if 2 years his way, we probably would have gotten married right away. But this happened really fast. I had to digest this a little bit. But
Was it instant for you too?
No, I got her phone number, I guess. Yeah. And I think we kind of started, texting and calling back and forth. And then I'm just realizing how much more we had in common. And then. You want to spend more time with each other. I will say the first time that she came to Oklahoma, when she left, I remember we stopped at Brahms there and ate ice cream, whatever, before she left. And when she left, I thought she was the one. Like, she was, I'm going to marry that girl, you know. So then it was another, year and a half before we actually got married. But yeah,
so we were engaged for a year and then married on the 13th. He left for the Amazing Race on the 14th or something like that. But no, being a mother has been a lifelong dream of mine. I can remember I went to college in marketing class when I was a senior. It was like an advanced marketing class. I remember my professor being like, Sarah, if you could have any job, work for any corporation, what would it be? And I had no answer for him. I said, I just really want to be a mom. I remember his jaw dropping. But being a mother and being parents has been a dream of ours, I would say, since the day we got married. And it's one of those things, as a kid, or not as a kid, but as a young adult, you think the instant, and you can relate to this, Caroline, the instant you're ready to become a mother, you think it's going to happen just like that, like it does for all your friends, And it didn't. And again, extreme faith, I just kind of kept telling myself, God has a plan, just stay patient, don't get too worked up, it'll happen when it's meant to happen, Well, 1 year passed, 2 year passed, 3 year passed. At that point, we're kind of like, okay. And we did go and get a little bit of medical help and be sure that we were both extremely healthy. And they're all like, yep, everything's perfect, And goodness, I think another year or two passed and we were kind of getting ready to, we were looking at each other like, what is this? Why us? Why, you hear stories about people complaining in a way that they're pregnant again, or, and those would hurt so bad. And it was just,
I know. How did you deal with that? Because I know just in the 1 year that we were waiting and feeling like, what if this never happens? Like, it was really one of the hardest, most depressing years of my life, because the same as you, it's like, I wanted to be a mother more than anything. And then there's this thought, like, what if it never happens? How did you deal with those emotions?
I can't tell you, just one day at a time, honestly. And I guess I'm probably not the best at dealing with, the pain and the hardship of it. So I've just tried to distract myself and at the same time, just keep praying. And the instant we gave, in a way, gave up. We're not giver uppers by any means. But when I just really laid it down and gave it all to God, and just said, and I knew in my heart too that in some way or another, we were going to be parents, whether that was through adoption or whatnot. But right when we were to the point where we were getting ready to seek more intense, I guess, medical help, we found out we were pregnant, and it's just been a dream. Yeah,
so
we didn't actually.
That when they finally let go of the control or whatever, and I mean that's sort of how we were. Yeah. We had an early miscarriage, then I had another miscarriage, and like my gyno was like, I just think you're probably gonna have to go to the next steps, and I was so over it and depressed and sad. I was like, I am done with all this. And then that's when we got pregnant too. Like, when we weren't even thinking about it. Why is it when you finally let go of that control that it happens? You hear that all the time.
I don't know. I mean, I can't help but think that God is really, really talking to us and saying, hey, Sarah, you know, this is on my time. This is my plan, you know, and just to really turn it over to him, no matter what we go through and challenges in life and so forth.
Do you feel the waiting for 7 years has made y'all be different parents than you would if you would have gotten pregnant right away?
Definitely. Definitely.
I see people have kids when they're late teens, and I'm 40 years old. I have, you know, my challenge is being a dad, and I'm like, thank God that we waited this long. I don't know. I don't know how I would have, you know, handled this little gal running around like crazy, you know, before then. So I think it is God's timing. I don't know. I'm thankful for whenever she comes, but you know, we had maybe more time to get prepared than others.
And I'd like to add to, like, I just have extreme appreciation every day when I wake up that I get to be her mother, and I get the gift of motherhood, because for so long I didn't know if it would happen. So.
Yes. Sarah, I totally relate to you, and I feel that emotion as well, and I feel like because of that, this is clearly how you feel too. Like, I don't get frustrated with the little things. And yes, there's some days where I am so tired and I am so happy for bedtime and I just want to have a glass of wine and get in the bath by myself. But every day I am so thankful that I get to be her mother. And I don't know if I would have had that same appreciation either. And I can't even imagine when you're for 7 years, I just was 1 year. So it's just like, I do think it's a blessing in the long run. It can totally be a blessing. Sure. Your mindset and appreciation.
For sure. For sure. The so-called little battles of motherhood and parenting and stuff. It's like, it's so fun. I love it. I love it when we're up for a challenge, you know, it's just pure joy all the time, good, bad, or otherwise. It's, we just feel so blessed and we're so grateful, and we just never take a day of being parents for granted.
So what has parenthood taught you guys, and how has it shifted your marriage?
No, that's a deep question. Right off the bat. I don't know that it's shifted our marriage at all. I don't know. It's got its own challenges. You want to be the best dad that you can be, and I think it's the maybe more responsibility for being a good example. I mean, if you look at the little girl walking around with one shoe on right now, that, you know, you want to be the example of, you know, what she needs to find in a man. Like, it's a big responsibility. And today, every word that you say, she knows and she takes it in and digests it. I don't know. It's a responsibility to be a good dad, I think. Don't you think, Tulsa?
Yeah, I would say too, you know, I have to remind myself, 7 year journey, and like I said, I'm just like absolutely in love with this little girl, but I'm also in love with this man. And sometimes I do feel, and I have to remind myself, because the husband has to come first, and I have to remind myself that, you know, because it's hard. We get so wrapped up in being a mother that we can't forget that we have to be a wife too. So that's always a daily battle. But Cord's been a trooper.
Well, and especially like for me, that first year of Sunny's life, which I feel like now she's one, we're in a routine and all this stuff. But like the first 6 months for sure, I was an emotional mess. I could not see the forest for the trees for a minute for like my old life. Like, it took me a while to get my own bearings and like feel like I could be myself again. And that it's a little bit of a transition period. Sure. You know, just coming up with your new normal.
For sure. For sure.
We're still looking for the normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
it never comes.
I don't know that it does, but if you find the secret or the big tip.
The Amazing Race has not ended yet, so yeah, we're still going.
I know. I kind of thought when the Amazing Race was over.
New locations, new challenges all the time.
That's so true. I thought there was like a moment when the Amazing Race ended. I was like, will I ever have adventure like this again in my life? And then it's like, oh, yes, yes, yes. Marriage, parenthood.
Yeah. Here's another one. Yeah.
Totally. So, Sarah, I want to talk to you about your business too, because you not only are this incredible cowgirl, mom, wife, all that. You have a very thriving business, which I have several friends who you're going to have to say it, are a part
of Monet.
Or are part of Monet, and it's an incredible like hair shampoo product, but also lifestyle. It's like really mentally, it's all about the lifestyle too, and like getting your brain right and like positive thinking and like teamwork. And talk to me about how you got involved with that and how that has like just opened your life up to a new way.
For sure. So it was actually about a year before I became pregnant. My hair was in pretty bad shape, and I went to my new hairstylist, and she introduced me to the products. And I'd been involved in other companies before. Major failure, might I add. But anyways, I knew these products were different, and I just kind of thought, you know what, I'm going to use them. I know there's tons of people that can benefit from them. I'm just going to dive in, and what do I have to lose? Nothing, you know? At that time, little did I know how much I needed this opportunity. So I just dove in, and it quickly evolved where it was more so a platform. Aside from the amazing products, amazing skincare, amazing wellness products, it was a platform for me to help other women and to show them that they can believe in themselves, they can change their life, they can do anything they want to do when, you know, I don't know, I know you can probably relate to us, or to me, it's a daily battle up here.
Sometimes
we feel like we're not working, we feel like we're not capable, we feel like we're not like those other girls. So it's just evolved into this big community and amazing culture that I'm just so grateful, because most importantly, I never, ever have to miss a moment with Tulsa. As crazy and chaotic as the day gets and you feel like you don't get anything done, I get to own every hour of my day and still be a cowgirl, be a rancher, and be a wife from home.
That, to me, I feel like as a mother who also wants to have my career going as well but doesn't want to miss out on my child's life, I want to be a great wife, I want to be involved with all that, I totally think that this day and age, opportunities like this for women to get involved with amazing companies and work from home and be able to build and grow. And really, you set the limit for how high you can go with it. And you can do it all on your own time. What an opportunity that we live in as women this day and age, where we don't feel like we have to sacrifice. Because I don't want to teach Sunny that you're going to grow up and get married and not chase a career or have a dream. Like, I want her to know that, like, you can do it all. And yeah, it's tiring and it's not easy, but you can. And I think that's just amazing. Mm-hmm. What a great.
For sure.
What a great opportunity. Are you here? Hello? Hello? I see y'all.
Uh-oh. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
No, yes. Sure.
No.
Oh,
no, no, no. Yeah. We're
okay,
here.
No, and like you said, it's like, to be able to have Tulsa at my side every hour of the day, even when I'm hustling and working and inspiring and trying to help as many people as I possibly can, I know she hears a lot of that, like Cord said. They're always listening. Their ears, they're just sponges, and they soak that up. So just to kind of lead the pathway, too, for her and the younger generations that I guess we don't have to fall into that trap of society that we have to go to work, clock in, clock out, you know, send our kids to daycare, make somebody else richer. We really can work on our own terms and dream as big as we want to dream. So I'm, like I said, little did I know I needed that opportunity, but I did. And it's been a fun ride. 3.5 years now, crazy enough.
Wow. That's amazing. Also, earlier when you were talking about the cowgirl code, Sarah, you said something about respecting the land. And then Cord, you were talking about the animals. Tell me y'all's relationship with animals, because I feel like sometimes in the world I live in, like, I'm not interacting with animals on a daily basis like you are, like working with them, you know, almost as a partnership. Tell me how you guys view animals and how that partnership works.
Well, I mean, I guess you take horses, for example. I mean, the only thing that you're going to get out of the horses is what you put in. I mean, it's building a relationship with them that they want to work together with you. You know, and I think it's the, you know, for Sarah's family, they live in Iowa and they raise corn and feed cattle. And, you know, we raise, bulls and cattle here as well. To even feel like that you're you're feeding the world. You know, not just our bulls for entertainment that you watch on TV. And, you know, those bulls have to love to do it anyways. I mean, you're just opening the gate and you know, they realize the challenge and the battle between, you know, the 150 pound rider on them and the bull, you know, that if they can buck them off in faster than 8 seconds that they win. I mean, they realize that. But I think, you know, it's taking care of the land as well, because, you know, if you abuse the land, it's not going to give back to you. And like this ranch, I mean, I'd like to be buried under a big oak tree here in 30, 40 years. But, you know, if I don't treat the land well, I'm not even going to get next year, much less the next 40 or 50 years. So I think you feel like you're stewards of the land of, you know, not overgrazing and taking care of your cattle and taking care of the land to always make it better. And even when I build pens out here, I feel like, you know, that someday Tulsa and maybe her husband will be working on the same ranch. So the job that I do today is going to affect generations to come.
So true. I feel like that's just so wise to think of it. Like, because sometimes we live in a culture where it's like, get everything you can as fast as you can and don't really value the long run. But in the long run, it's going to be gone if we don't value it now.
The land and the cattle don't work just that way. You've kind of got to take care of it. You know, even this year to be able to survive next year. I mean, it's that fast of a turnaround in abusing the land or taking care of your cattle. I mean, because if you don't give to them, they can't give back to you. I mean, it's like your kids out there, your family. You have to care for them. And you know, they eat every day, and the most challenging days for them is when you have to be there. You know, you talk about when storms roll in, or ice storms, snow storms, or even in the heat of the summer, you know, being too hot. So, you know, everybody wants to be a cowboy when it's 72 degrees outside and it's deep grass. It's when it's, you know, freezing cold for a week, or 110 degrees for a week, that you know, that's when cowboys get few and far between.
Amen to
usually
that.
When the cowgirls take care of it, though.
That's right. How do you survive those hard times, like the droughts and the heat waves and all that? Like, what do you do to make?
Well, I think water and shade, I think, would be the most important you know, thing in the heat of the summer. You know, you talk about the winter. Especially where they're from in Iowa, is having coverage for those cattle to be able to get in the heat, and you know, having enough feed and protein and fat on their bodies to be able to take the cold as well. So you know, it's hundreds of years and several generations that have trained the farmers and ranchers and the cattle as well to be able to take the temperatures. And you talk about just even the breedings of cattle in different regions from Canada to Mexico. Being able to take the heat in the south and take the cold in the north. So it's there's a lot of technology in it as well.
Okay, so I have a few more questions, and then I'll let you wrap up, because I know y'all are in the big middle of doing all sorts of stuff. You said you're like having a big set. So what are some of your secrets to marriage? Because I feel like you guys have a really...
Stay married.
A really strong marriage. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect every day, but I feel the commitment through you guys, and I feel the love. Even though I don't know y'all like personally as a couple all the time, I feel like I do, and I feel like y'all have just a strength in your marriage. And what are some of the secrets to it?
Never quit, I guess. I mean, I know that sounds I don't know. I think a lot of people have taken the I'm not saying the easier way, but we'll stay married if this and if that, and I think it's a commitment, and not you know, saying the word commitment lightly, that Sarah's gonna be my wife until I die, and that's you know, that's kind of it. I don't know if it's a commitment. We have our troubles and our struggles, and
of course
our challenges, I guess. Is that what you call fights? I don't know what you call them. You know, but I never felt that one day is like, you know what, if she does that one more time, you know.
Here, one second. I wanted to add too, you know, Court said, you know, that, that no quit mindset. Is I always try to remind myself when we are struggling, because we do, or we don't have this perfect, amazing relationship, but I will say there's lots of commitment there. That I try to have that mindset to rejoice when things get tough and when things aren't perfect, or when he's ill, or when our finances are in horrible shape, or, you know, we're grieving about something, whatever it is, you know, it's going to make us stronger in the long run. And I always try to think that, because, and remind myself of that, because I've experienced that over 10 years. It'll actually be 10 years this November, crazy enough.
Oh my gosh.
I know it goes so fast, as you know, but, it is, it's just like when we thought we weren't going to make it, you know, which we never said that, but you know, those days where you feel like, oh my goodness, this is hard work. And it is, it's work, but it's worth it. And any of those hard times, they made us so much stronger in the end. So in a way, I try to have that mindset to rejoice when it's not easy.
I love that, Sarah. That is such a good piece of advice, because you're so right. If you weather the storm, you're so much stronger for it. So rejoice. I freaking love that. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up with leave your light. And basically, what do you want people to know?
What do I want people to know? Oh my goodness. You go first there.
I go first? I guess, I don't know. I mean, there's so much, but I feel like I can't help but not go to my go-tos, and that is be kind, be respectful, be hardworking, know that you are worthy, know that you're capable, and don't give up when things get hard. Keep going. You're worthy.
Amen. Cord, take us home.
I can't beat that. Yeah. I don't know. I think you definitely want people to be able to see your walk and be able to answer all the rest of the questions of like, hey, you know, Cord's X and Cord's Y and Cord's honest and Cord works hard. And I don't want to have to be walking around waving my flag, telling people that. Like, I want them to see that in my way of life, that I am a good husband, I am a Christian, I am honest. So I think maybe just showing it in your walk. Maybe that's
it. Love that.
Yeah. I don't want to have to tell everybody.
The cowboy way, yeah.
Why would you?
The cowboy way. I love it. You guys, I love you guys so much. I'm so happy we got to have this conversation. I hope I get to see y'all in the flesh and blood one day again soon. I mean, or not soon, just sometime. And I love watching you guys. I think y'all are such incredible people, examples, parents, all of it. Y'all are just lights to this world, and I feel so happy and blessed to know you both. So thank y'all for taking the time to come on here.
Thank you for having us, and right back at you.
Yeah, you are too.
Oh, well, you guys, I love you both. And tell Jet I said what's up. I haven't seen him since the Amazing Race either. One day, we got it. Maybe one day we'll do an Amazing Race reunion with all the families. That would be fun. Or at least some of our people.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll put it out there. We'll see if it comes back.
I'm in.
All right. Okay, guys. Well, thank y'all for joining me. Y'all are the best.
Thank you.
See ya. Have a great day.
Bye.